Well, we are continuing 2 Corinthians, and we're in chapter 11. And we'll just start with verse 1 and really going to pick up in verse 12, but just to kind of get our bearings once again. Paul is being off and on sarcastic through this period, through this section, as he is addressing, he's writing, obviously, addressing the Corinthians, but his focus is on these false teachers, these that have set themselves up, sometimes referred to as super apostles, these that have put themselves, placed themselves above everyone, and in the process, they do they brag, that's, you know, on themselves, putting themselves up here, so I'll go over here and talk to this group. And and so Paul in this section talks about, the fallacy of boasting, but then moves on and in that sense of saying, well, since they've boasted, then I will enter into this same kind of foolishness and boast too. And that goes back and forth in the sense of, at times, he's being very sarcastic, but yet at the same time, in other places, he's being straightforward about who, his same credentials comparing to theirs, but it's always in that sense of saying it's foolishness, which has almost like a double-edged sword, because this is what they do, so when he's doing it, almost in the sense of matching their credentials, but he's always saying, but it's foolish to be doing this. But in verse 1 of chapter 11, it says, I wish that you would bear with me in a little foolishness, but indeed you are bearing with me. For I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy, for I betrothed you to one husband, so that to Christ I might present you as a pure virgin. But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by the craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. For if one comes to preach, if one comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit from which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. For I consider myself not in the least inferior to the most eminent apostles. But even if I am unskilled in speech, yet I am not so in knowledge. In fact, in every way we have made this evident to you in all things. Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? I robbed other churches by taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone, for when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything, I kept myself from being a burden to you and will continue to do so. As the truth of Christ is in me, this boasting of mine will not be stopped in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows that I do. But what I am doing, I will continue to do. And in this next section, we see a continuation of this. But Paul enters into it a little more forcefully in the sense of saying, matching their boasting. And in there's a section coming up where he lists his sufferings. And at this time period, some Greek philosophers put sufferings at the very top, almost, or very high in the sense of a person's character. And so it would appear that these self-imposed super apostles had been bragging about how much they had suffered for Christ. And so Paul puts his sufferings alongside them. And so in every way, Paul is saying, I match or I exceed where they are at. But then you'll always notice all the way through it, he keeps referring to, but this is foolishness to even be talking about this. And so it's, he has that one point of saying, well, actually, if you're going to, if you're going to give them credit because they've done this, I've done even more. And so to the audience, it's like, well, why would you, you're not giving me the a hearing, but you'd give them hearing, but I even have better credentials. But then indirectly to this other group, it's like, but it's foolish to even be talking about these as something legitimate that gives you a standing. So in verse 12 it says, But what I am doing, I will continue to do, so that I may cut off opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded, just as we are in matters about which they are boasting. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. Now, if there's any doubt about where Paul stands about this group that he's since causing problems, it's pretty clear here. He calls them false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. So twice he said that they're, you know, false apostles in two different ways. They disguise themselves. And he goes on to give an explanation about how that could be or why that would be true. He says, no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Paul states this just factually that Satan does this, and then so that raises a question. You know, I guess for us could raise the question at least: how does he do this? So often we think of temptations in terms of evil, which, I mean, obviously are at some level, but I mean the very obvious, gross kind of thing, evil that would grab your attention and pull you away, you know, suck the life out of you type of situations. But yet, when you look the reference earlier to that Eve was deceived, and even the temptations in Genesis, while the temptations are there and they're evil and pulling away, but the temptations were more of not a one of an, you know, an outright attack on God, or not one that's an outright of, go do these things that are sinful, but more of discounting it. Well, God surely didn't mean that. Surely you've misunderstood. Surely that wouldn't happen. Almost as he's on that side. And so, you know, when you think about a lot of the things that go on, you know, sometimes it is. People that have positioned themselves in a way of almost being light. And I don't know that we can, you know, give any exact examples without divine revelation of God, who say, clearly this person's not a Christian. But we are aware that there are times where those that have set themselves up or been set up or raised up through a system, lead people astray and lead them astray very, very strongly. And there's almost a very clear turning point. So the extent of what he's talking about, how that would always work, I don't know that we have great examples, other than we have these references to here that Paul says this, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it's not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds. So if Satan operates that way, then those that align with him, it would only be reasonable that those that follow Satan would do the same things. And his servants, once again, I don't, here it's not, his demons, but those that are aligned. I think when we think of servants of Christ, we're thinking of those that have made this profession, this commitment to him, But we need to remember those that are certain servants of Satan are not necessarily those that gather to worship Satan, but those that reject the gospel, those that are not believers. You know, at some level, they are servants of Satan. And so Paul is, it's very strong who these are, you know, false apostles. They only disguise themselves as apostles of Christ. And so Paul begins once again in his placing, you know, who he is, and in verse 16 moves into this area about his the physical things. And it's not him just listing his physical things he's been through. The only thing that makes sense is that they've done this, and so he's comparing that, and his exceeds theirs. But at the same time, we see this this whole overriding sense that it's just foolish to even be talking this way to begin with. Verse 16, he says, "Again, I say, let no one think me foolish, but if you do, receive even my foolish, receive me even as foolish, so that I also may boast a little. While I am saying, what I am saying is, I am not saying as the Lord would, but in foolishness, in this confidence of boasting. Since many boast according to the flesh, I will boast also. For you, being so wise, tolerate the foolish gladly." I mean, the irony, the sarcasm here, you know. You're so wise that you can tolerate foolishness. "For you tolerate it if anyone enslaves you, anyone devours you, anyone takes advantage of you, anyone exalts himself, anyone hits you in the face. To my shame, I must say that we have been weak by comparison." That sounds like the, you know, if we could kind of change it around and put it into being tolerant. Where tolerantism has come to. And Paul is obviously here is being very sarcastic. "For you tolerate it if anyone enslaves you." Well, nobody wants to be enslaved. But yet, Paul's saying that's what's happening. If someone devours you, well, no one wants to be devoured. But yet, that's what's happening. Somebody takes advantage of you. Well, they don't see it. They're being taken advantage of. Someone exalts himself even to the point of hitting you in the face. And then Paul says, you know, it's been to my shame that we're weak by comparison, that we just don't act that way toward you. We're just so wimpy, we haven't done that. It's interesting how those things go. That, you know, when people strong-arm people at times, they give in. And that's actually what could be said of them. I didn't know what I needed to do was hit you over the head with a baseball bat. I'm sorry I haven't been loving enough to hit you, you know, because that's what you respond to, as, you know, almost what he's saying here. In the middle of the verse, he says, "But in whatever respect anyone else is bold, I speak in foolishness, I am just as bold myself." Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? Well, so am I. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. He's already said they're false apostles, they're deceptive, but that's what they're proclaiming to be. He says, I more so. So he's, you know, anything they have said, Paul says, you know, I've got the same credentials. And then it comes into this area about physical things. He says, in far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship, through many sleepless nights and hunger and thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. apart from such external things, I just love that part. You know, apart, it's almost like apart from those little insignificant physical things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without me being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? So we can, you know, discern here or deduct that these are the kinds of things that the false apostles have claimed about themselves. See, we are credible because we've suffered for Christ. And Paul says, well, if anybody suffered, I suffered more. And he goes through a list that's, as far as suffering, is a pretty impressive list. But yet the whole thing is like, it's foolish to be boasting about this. You know, this is not something you boast about, but if they're going to boast about it, well, I can boast even better. But even in that, he has a way of moving it back toward genuine concern. So while people are talking about suffering, he goes through all the physical suffering, and then he moves it back into this genuine concern, this internal love that he has for them. You know, who's ever been in need that it wasn't a concern to me? Who's been weak without it affecting me? Who's been led into sin without that impacting my life? Verse 30, if I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. Now, there's an interesting, because he ends on this about being weak. Well, see, the other group, you can imagine the apostles, false apostles, haven't been boasting about any sense of weakness. But Paul says, you know, nobody's weak without me being weak. And he moves on to pertains to my weaknesses. He says, the God and the Father of the Lord Jesus, He who is blessed forever, knows that I'm not lying. And Demacus, I came to speak here, anyway, Paul was let down through a basket. You know, he ends with this rather humorous story after going through all of these things. And yet, you know, when you think about this, these super apostles claiming how gifted they are, how they're God's servants and all the things God's doing for them. And then Paul reminds people, oh yeah, by the way, you know, I was in the city and they were going to kill me. And so some of the brethren put me in this big basket and lowered me out the window and I escaped. Well, you know, that's not exactly the picture of this, Samson kind of a person that's going to take on the world. And so Paul comes back to the sense of, he says, I'll boast in my weaknesses. But it's this, his devotion to Christ and the things he's been through. It's these kinds of letters sure make us wish we had videotape or something of these other people, what they actually say, because we only can deduct what they're doing. But it's not that difficult to deduct, but we just wish we had, you know, more clarity of some of those things. But this whole section, apart from the argument in Corinthians of seeing what the false apostles have been doing, which gives us the application of how do we evaluate people? And often the evaluation comes based upon what people claim about themselves. And people move us from an area that they have authority into another area, and we just go along. And so somebody actually does have authority in one area, and we hear them speak, and then they start talking about other stuff, and we just kind of go along there also. And that's, very much the same way, this deception. But the other thing this chapter indirectly does is it gives us this really clear glimpse of the Apostle Paul. I mean, we know some of these things about Paul here only because he is forced to almost brag about himself to counter the false apostles. because this is contrary to who he is to be saying these things about himself. And in a similar way, the same thing happens in Philippians when we hear some things about, you know, when Paul tells us some stuff about himself. It's in those contrast situations where he's forced to say these things that he seems uncomfortable with saying, but yet it discloses a person that has, in, you know, just undergone just tremendous obstacles for the cause of Christ, and yet has such a love and devotion for the people. Those two are very difficult to have. You know, when one has a lot of traumatic things, it's much easier to become calloused or to become arrogant and put yourself above others. Look what I've done for you mentality. Or to be, I've done all this and, you know, I'm only going to deal with the ones that really are influential. I'm not going to mess around with all these peons. You know, you kind of get, you know, those are, not to do one of those is very difficult. And Paul here talks about, you know, who's been in need, who's in trouble that it doesn't affect me. You know, there is a real tenderness, but yet at the same time with that tenderness is a person that can stand very firm and not give an inch. So, you know, it's an interesting setup. But as far as those at Corinth, I think the application for us would be, how are we evaluating people? You know, what is our standard for evaluating people? Do we really set up our own little standards? Do we let them set it up? Or do we really have a biblical thing that we look at, for that foundation? Well, any thoughts or insights or questions? Or
do we have a conclusion whether the super apostles were believers that maybe got a big head because of some suffering, or if they were just charlatans?
From this section, clearly, and I think from some others, that, you know, Paul does not view them as believers. Because even here, you know, in verse 23, he says, are they servants? Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I am more so. And then the other one, to call them false apostles and deceptions, and comparing them to as servants of Satan. It appears that they have a message that is different, not just self-imposed leaders that got a little carried away with their ego, or not like Peter that sided with one group when maybe, you know, when he shouldn't have, you know, that Paul addresses in Galatians. But this is, it seemed, I would think that, it, you know, this is very much a group that's outside.
There's
just
no connection at all.
Yeah, and, which always is, and are they, I guess, which raises, one of those questions that we just, is very difficult. When that happens, are they, are they people that have a very clear perception that they reject Christ and they just see an opportunity to get something for themselves? Or is it people that are either, self-deceived or deceived by Satan that end up working for Satan? That, or does it have to be one or the other, or could some of them been one way and the other? A long time ago, I was working with, was introduced to a lady that had, wasn't truly a Jehovah's Witness, but had studied with them. And had studied with them long enough that she was not willing to go to anything that would be recognized as, truly a Protestant church, Christendom, or even meet with anybody. And so there was a lady that we kind of knew or something, had encountered somewhere. I'm not sure how. But anyway, she saw her in a store one day, and she was asking me about it. Would I be willing to meet with this woman? Because she wouldn't have anything to do with any mainline churches. And so I started meeting with Jan. And you know, and I'd meet with her once a week, and it seemed like we'd make great progress. And the next week, it was just right back where it was. And I did that for several weeks, and I, you know, realized, you know, this is not going anywhere. And so I suggested that we read their materials and use that as a basis instead of using, you know, kind of from the basis I was coming from, this is what I probably look at their stuff. And so we started reading their books or magazines and looking up all the verses. And the verses, when you looked them up in the books and, you know, articles and letters that we were looking at anyway, they either made absolutely no sense whatsoever. You couldn't figure out what it had to do with the passage or the statement. Or it was very clear it was just out of context. I mean, it was one of those two. I mean, just it was like there were just verses put in there. And you know, when you read, it's just got references to all these verses. Footnotes or references, just tons of references. But when you actually started looking at it. And then later on some other reading, there was an article, and I've somehow loaned it out or something. I don't have it anymore. It's one of the best articles I've ever read on the deity of Christ from 1 John. And it is, they are going through 1 John, the first few verses of 1 John. They cite all the right grammars, all the right lexical things, all the right definitions, you know, and they go through it, and which, you know, it just clearly shows that this passage is teaching the deity of Christ, and then they conclude the opposite. And it's like, they just cited all this stuff that's pointing this direction, and then they just kind of go, therefore. And, you know, my thought at that time, I remember, was either, you know, either these people are incredibly deceived or very manipulative. Because it was just unbelievable that you could cite these references that so clearly, I mean, that's what the references are saying, that this means this and this means this, and this deduction leads here, and they go, yes, 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 and then they jump over here what they're there for. So I think it's, which is it? I don't know. Or is it always one or the other? But that's how I would see this in that regard, is that people that put themselves in that position, they're very devoted, very zealous, but what is actually motivating them, I don't know. You know, are they just self-deceived, or do they have ulterior motives? But I don't think Paul is given any room that these are believers that have overstepped their authority. Because I think if it was, I think Paul would be addressing it differently. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I have no doubts that, you know, I think the one thing we can be very confident in, that we are all consistently inconsistent. You know, that we, you know, none of us, you know, truly follow our theology. And you know, we have gaps and holes and things like that. You know, maybe it's one of those things, it's easier to see the glaring mistakes of others than your own glaring mistakes, and maybe that's true with our theological stance also. But yeah, some of that just is that there. I have a really good friend. She was really instrumental in, you know, when I first became a Christian, and I haven't seen her. Well, I guess last time I saw her, they did come to my mother's funeral, but I only got to see him for a few minutes, and You know, so it's been years since I've actually been able to, you know, talk with her and stuff. And but just, you know, a wonderful lady. And she called me. Well, I sent her a copy of my dissertation, and she called me. And one of the things that in the conversation was her brother has really gotten into prosperity theology. And their mother died a year ago or 2 years ago or something like that. And something in that course of when she was sick that he, there was something about, he'd come across something about giving God, you know, so I can't remember, but it's something like, you know, you give God this amount of money and, you know, it was this faith thing. You know, it's not like buying indulgences, but it's this issue of faith or something. But anyway, he just had no doubt that, you know, Mom would recover. And this was very consistent with the, you know, what they're teaching and things. But then Mom died. And it was very devastating, she told me. You know, just Betty was saying that just, it was just, you know, it just turned his world upside down. And then, you know, the way of recovery became, you know, he told Betty, he said, well, you know, I think Mom just didn't want to live. And, you know, she said she got so mad at him and told him never to, she didn't ever want to hear that from him yet. But you have to come up with a way to make it work, see. And I think that's, like I said, we may manipulate some of our theology that way too. I'm not trying to say we don't. But I think in that one, there are very glaring manipulations because you have to make it work. There has to be, everything has to. And so you end up with, you know, this faith thing that, well, it's because they didn't have faith or somebody else, you know, caused it. So, but, you know, I'm not doubting that at least most, you know, the great majority of those people are believers. But I think in situations like that, I'm not trying to talk about any one group or anything, I think situations like that, you know, those are great environments for actually a false apostle to show up and lead people astray. There was this group in, you know, which is not trying to connect it with the prosperity diet. I make these clarifications since Rob is recording this. Not trying to make any association with prosperity theology, but when I first became a believer and I was in college, there was a group in Amarillo that they, you know, were often at the campus at West Texas State, and that was kind of the time when, you know, the Moonies or something from Korea, that big group was around, you know, where they go around at airports. But this is kind of almost, they had a very distinctive dress. I can't remember if they were in robes or not, but I just remember it very distinctive. And it was, and a lot of it was raising money, getting money. And there was a shepherd. And all of this went to him. And I remember our pastor going, we were talking about one day, he said, well, it seems like a pretty good deal if you're the chief shepherd or something, you know. But, I mean, I think those are some of the ones you really have to wonder. I mean, is that anything beyond manipulation? And obviously we don't know. You know, I'm not trying to say the guy, that person. But it's clearly wrong. But it does lead people astray. And that kind of stuff, you know, comes from people at some level boasting to get confidence. You know, I'm in this standing with God, and I have this standing with God that's quite different from your standing. And therefore, are there prayer requests?